So I guess people are us. So I'm Gina Fernandez. I'm one of the geriatricians internists in DHMC. And I gave this talk, I think, about in fall last year, and there was some good feedback, so we're repeating it this year. So this is going to be more of an informal session, more of a question and answer, true or false.
Are they waiting for you to turn that on?
No.
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you, though. So nothing formal. So feel free to ask questions anytime. So first of all, let's define some terms. So what, when we say osteoporosis, what do we really mean when people have osteoporosis? So osteoporosis is a medical condition where the bones become weak or fragile and more likely to break easily. So as you can see, over the years, you see that picture on the left of the bone in younger individuals where they're more compact and dense. As you age, because you have less calcium and phosphorus deposit, they become less dense and they become more fragile and therefore can break easily. So this is just a graph showing you the changes in bone mass and bone density as you age. So normally you went from birth until mid-30s, you have more of bone production rather than bone destruction. By the mid-30s though, most people begin to lose more bone than can be replaced. So as a result, you'll see your bones will become thinner and weaker in structure. And a lot of this is also affected by multiple factors in your environment, in your diet, in your genetic makeup. Okay, so right now, as you can see in the map, this is the prevalence, or this is how many people have osteoporosis or low bone density in the U.S. Specifically in New Hampshire and Vermont, we still have a bit, fairly low rate of 2.5 to 1.3%. But if we're not going to do anything about it, and if the prevalence remains the same, they're estimating that by 2030, we're going to see an increase of about 40 to 50% in people having osteoporosis. And why is this important? Osteoporosis can lead to, as you know, fractures, and it's becoming more costly and results in more hospitalizations, more ED visits, more doctor's offices. And if they fracture, they go for surgery, some of them don't do well and end up in nursing homes. So this is why it's important that we pay attention to osteoporosis. Now, so this we'll begin now with our question and answer, true or false. So myth one, and these are more of the questions that I get from my patients when I see them in the clinic. So osteoporosis is only a problem for older Caucasian women. I think this is true or false?
False.
So yes, both gender can be affected and all races are affected. So you could see even men over 50 can have osteoporosis, and it is estimated that it's about close to a million who have osteoporosis. And among women, this is significantly higher. Now, while it is true that most Caucasian and Asian women are the ones at the highest risk of developing osteoporosis, Blacks and Hispanics are also prone to developing this problem. So question number two. Osteoporosis, when you get it, when you see the diagnosis, is painful.
False.
Yes. So osteoporosis is actually known as a silent disease. It is not osteoporosis per se that is painful, but it is when you develop the fractures that causes the pain. So when people say, I have back pain because I have osteoporosis, what they're actually saying is maybe the back pain is from another condition like arthritis, or maybe they fractured their spine at one point because they had osteoporosis, but not because, osteoporosis per se, it will not cause you any pain. And if you do fracture, these are the most common sites when they're saying that you have fracture related to osteoporosis, you'll see that in the wrist, in the vertebrae and the hip. So, another question. So, if you do drink a lot of milk and exercise, you are not at risk.
Off.
Yes. Because there are other factors that you cannot correct that is inherent, maybe inherent in you, that even if you drink tons of milk and you exercise a lot, you're still going to be prone to developing osteoporosis. What exercise and calcium does, though, it helps delay the progression of the osteoporosis and stimulates more bone helps you stimulate more bone formation. We'll talk more about exercise as we go on through the talk. So these are the factors that you cannot change. They include, you know, your gender, your age, your body size, basically small, thin females are more at risk than those who are obese or overweight. And we've already talked about ethnicity. And of course, if you do have family history of osteoporosis, then you're also going to be more at risk. So the other risk factors that you may acquire in life is if you're using certain medications like steroid treatment, people who are on prednisone, people who have lung diseases and they need to be on prednisone or long-term prednisone, they're prone to developing osteoporosis. People who are inactive and lying in bed all the time, they're not stimulating the bone production. You know, they're not exercising. Smoking and drinking alcohol in itself causes leads to you to have a higher risk for developing osteoporosis. So, this is the other question that why people are hesitant to get testing for osteoporosis every 2 years or 3 years. Osteoporosis testing exposes you to a lot of radiation.
False.
In fact, it only takes about 5 to 10 minutes and it uses less radiation, even less than, if I believe right, than the x-ray you're getting when you're getting a routine chest x-ray. So it's worth really having the testing for osteoporosis. Your Medicare or your insurance will usually pay for osteoporosis screening every 2 to 3 years. So it's also covered by your insurance. Now, when you have osteoporosis, there's nothing you can do. So the obvious answer is false, because there are treatment options for osteoporosis. This includes a balanced diet rich in calcium and vitamin D, your exercise plan, a healthy lifestyle, so this means giving up on smoking, on drinking, and there are medications which we will talk about later on that can help when you have osteoporosis. So exercise. To me, this is really the key. And you have those discs at the back, for those of you who haven't gotten it yet. This is a good video that will show you exercises that will help improve your balance and your strength. So you also have to we also have to remember that not all forms of exercise is actually good. There are exercises when you have osteoporosis that you need to be careful. And you need to inform your doctor if you plan to do any of these exercises. So what are good exercises? Good exercises are those that will provide you stability, balance, flexibility. Even weight-bearing exercises are the ones that are found to be effective in helping with osteoporosis and strength training, especially for the upper back. And which exercises should you avoid? So obviously, if you have the osteoporosis, you don't want to get yourself involved in high-impact sports or exercises that will make you prone to developing those vertebral fractures. You don't want to do excessive bending and twisting. So if you're engaged in yoga, you need to, ask your instructor if this is safe if you do have osteoporosis, because a lot of the bending and twisting can, and if you have severe osteoporosis, particularly in the spine, can lead to what we call compression fractures. Okay, so the more calcium I take, the better. So right now they're saying that you just need to take the appropriate amount of calcium, because some people take more than what they should, and they're finding evidence that it's really not good to be taking too much calcium. Right now the recommended daily requirement for calcium is 1,000 milligrams per day for most adults, and about 1,200 for females more than 50 and men over the age of 70. So there's a handout in the back that you can see will give you how much calcium you will need depending on what your life stage is. And it also lists food sources of calcium. And when we're saying you would need 1,200 milligrams per day of calcium for women and men over the age of 70, this means that it will include the calcium that you take in on your diet. So if you really want to determine how much you're taking on a daily basis, you could go through the web, and actually there are calcium calculators that will enable you to calculate the amount of calcium you're taking in a day. And most of the pills that you have in each pill that you take, most of them would have about 600 milligrams already of calcium in each pill. So if you take a lot of yogurt and milk, then that can supplement half of the calcium that you're taking.
Are they recommending that you not take much more than that because it's negative if you take more, or what is the problem if you take more? Is it things like
heart disease is what they're relating it to right now. So there's a big study that came out. They studied a population of nurses, the Women's Health Initiative. So there's been, the study came about 2 to 3 years ago. They're saying that what happens is you're taking more calcium, and they're seeing that people who are taking more calcium are more prone to developing heart problems or heart diseases, but they really did not see a direct relationship so far. It was an extrapolated result. So that said, they're just giving caution to us that maybe we're really taking too much more than what we should, because we, especially here, we're, our diet is very high in calcium. Most of us take at least a glass of milk a day, or we eat a lot of yogurt. And as you can see here, just eating 8 ounces of yogurt is already about 415 milligrams of calcium. Add to that the milk that you're taking, so you're practically taking half, when you're taking, practically taking one pill when you're taking yogurt and milk, the amount of calcium. So that's why they're saying just stick to the recommendation, and that includes the calcium in your diet. Okay, so this is about vitamin D. So we live in the Northern Hemisphere, but a lot of us go to Florida during the winter and fall. And, they're saying, well, I get enough sun exposure, I don't need the vitamin D supplements. It's, and obviously the answer will be false. So even though you get a lot of sun exposure, most of the vitamin D is actually in your skin. And as you age, there is a decrease in the absorption of vitamin D.
There's a what? Excuse me? Huh? As you get older, what happens?
The absorption of vitamin D in your body is also lowered, it's decreased. Okay. So even if you get a lot of sun exposure, it doesn't mean that you're getting enough vitamin D. On top of that, a lot of us would have developed diseases that would alter the absorption of vitamin D and calcium in our GI tract and our And so this will ultimately affect the amount of vitamin D that we have in our system. So there, you'll see a lot of recommendations on vitamin D. Some say just take 400 units, some say 600 units. I do advise my patients to take at least 800 to 1,000 units of vitamin D if they're age 50 or older. We also check vitamin D levels, and you want them between 30 and 74. So you'll see some of these patients, when you check vitamin D levels, you'll find that their levels are like 8 or 10. And that qualifies them to have severe vitamin D deficiency, and you will need to take higher doses to bring it up to the normal range before you resume taking the normal, before you go and take the normal daily supplements of 800 to 1,000. Now, right now, you need to be checking your multivitamins and your calcium pills, because they have added extra vitamin D on them because they've realized how important this vitamin is to a lot of our systems in the body, our enzyme systems in the body. So you will note that when you're taking your calcium pills that has vitamin D, it would already have about 800, you will be taking about 800 units in a day. Add to that your multivitamins, which would probably have about additional 400. So you really might be going over vitamin D. So you need to be checking that.
And that, is there a problem if you take too much vitamin D also? And the other thing is, it seems like the last few years, there seem to be more people that are deficient in vitamin D. Is this more a diagnosis, or I mean that they were not diagnosed in the
exactly.
past?
Exactly. So we haven't really been screening mm-hmm. before, but because we found a lot of research has found that it's really low vitamin D is associated with falls, with a lot of conditions. So people have become more proactive in screening. So you're finding a lot of people now who are vitamin D deficient.
Are they vitamin D deficient for many other reasons, though, other than the sunlight? And what can cause that? Is it just something systemic, or?
Yes, it's the absorption. As you age, there's decreased absorption. So they're seeing that even if, because you'll find even people living in the tropics, for instance, who have a lot of sun exposure, when you check their vitamin D levels, you'll find that their levels are low, and you would wonder why. So a lot of it is not only organ systems that have decreased, you know, as you age, you decrease the absorption, but they found out that even using a lot of that sunblock for people who are in the tropics do affect like your ability to absorb vitamin D. So there's multiple factors that could affect the level of vitamin D in your blood. That said, you're also right. So now that we're screening more, so we're supplementing more, a few years ago, we didn't have recommendations on how much you can take, because you could take as much as 50, you see people taking as much as 50,000 units a week of vitamin D, and that's totally safe, especially if their level is very low, because the therapeutic index is very wide for vitamin D. We haven't really yet determined what the toxic levels are or the toxic effects are of vitamin D. What we're finding out though lately is that you really should maintain it between 30 and 50. Some say 30 to 100. You don't want to go over 100 of your vitamin D levels because, as we said, we don't know yet what the effects are, and we're not really seeing any benefit when you're taking more than, when your levels of vitamin D are above 100 or even 50. So they're saying just maintain it between 30 and 50. Yes.
As far as the absorption, mm-hmm. Recently I read about taking your glasses off when you're out in the sun? What can you tell us about that? Because my glasses are tinted.
Yes. So it's the same concept as people who are wearing sunblocks. There's really not much evidence to it yet that taking the sunglasses off really affects it. Because most of your vitamins...
Referring to the absorption through the eyes,
yeah.
I guess. Is that for eye health more than it is for...
No, I don't think it's for eye health. It's more for it's where your vitamin D is...
The total absorption.
Yeah. Absorption.
So you practice that or you've read that or...
No, I really don't, because as I said, like, whatever, even if you're living in the tropics or if you have sun exposure, as you age anyway, the ability of your body to absorb the vitamin D gets lower over time. So what I do is I really check vitamin D levels to make sure that we are in the appropriate range, especially for my patients who have osteopenia or low bone density or osteoporosis or who've had fractures. I would want to check the vitamin D levels and make sure that we're correcting it.
How often would you test them if a person's vitamin D is fine?
If it's fine?
Yes.
I just check once a year. Okay. And pretend that they're supplementing anyway, 800 to 1,000 units, I would check them once a year.
So I find this fine, then yeah. I don't take any supplements.
So then
yeah.
Once a year is fine? Or once every 2 years, okay. Because we know that you probably are one of those lucky ones.
For doing the same thing, eating the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. By the way, vitamin D is among dietary sources of vitamin D. There's really not much food that will contain vitamin D because it's really one of those vitamins that you get from, you know, what we do is we fortify foods to have that vitamin D. So a lot of your milk will have vitamin D in it. So there's not much sources for vitamin D in terms of diet.
Natural sources without fortified orange juice.
Or yeah, that milk, one, that's sort of milk. Being milk.
But naturally it doesn't have the vitamin D.
Not much, very minimal in sardines or seafoods, but that's why we really, because vitamin D is inherent in our body. It gets activated because of the light.
Oh, okay. Do you have a high incidence of people with deficient vitamin D?
Yes. A lot of people, again, because we're screening more, so we're finding out that a lot of people are deficient in vitamin D. If 10 years ago we wouldn't have known this because we were screening.
So if you find someone's deficient, do you then test more regularly than once a year?
So usually we correct them. We give them high doses of vitamin D. We give them 50,000 units for about 8 to 10 weeks. We opt to test at 8 weeks, but usually I just check them at least once a year to make sure that we're giving them adequate, we have corrected the low vitamin D levels. Most of the time after they treat it anyway, I'm assuming, you can assume that you've replenished the vitamin D. They continue taking 800 to 1,000 units. Most of the time, you'll find that their vitamin D is already close to 30 by then. So just remember, you just need to be, you don't want to overdo it as well. So you want to do between 30, you want to make sure that the levels are between 30 and 50. Some say 30 to 100. Do you have other questions? Okay. So, now we move on to the medications that we use to treat osteoporosis. So, a lot of people are hesitant to take medications used to treat osteoporosis because they think they're dangerous. They've seen they've heard, or maybe they've had some personal experience from a close friend or relative who had developed complications from osteoporosis treatment. But definitely, like, most drugs, a lot of drugs will have side effects, but the side effects related to the drug treatment that most people are fearful of when they have osteoporosis is that bad necrosis of the jaw. The jaw rot looks like it's rotting. That's why they don't want to take the medication. But that's a very rare complication. There's no way to predict who will get it or not. The ones who are at highest risk to develop this type of complications are those with bad dentition to begin with, or who have jaw jaw diseases to begin with. They really had bad caries or dental problems, dentitions. They're the most ones who are at risk. But on the average, this is very low in incidence.
But the necrosis is going to appear, if a person is at risk for necrosis, can they get it way later, or would it happen early, or there's no way?
There's no way. Of
it can happen at any time.
Mm-hmm.
Necrosis is
rotting. Basically, it's rotting of the your jawbone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we have first line medications used to treat osteoporosis, and these are the bisphosphonates. Most of patients who are on osteoporosis, you'll hear them taking Fosamax, Actonel, or Bomiva. They're slightly different in the formulation and in the frequency of taking the medications, but they all act the same way. So the first lines, which is the Fosamax, the Actonel, and the Bomiva, they're actually pill forms that you take. So most of the problem that patients get when they take this pill form is they get a lot of GI side effects, because you really have to take this on an empty stomach. You have to be upright for 20 minutes, so you can't lie down because it increases your reflux. So some patients have difficulty complying with the treatment with this medication. So even if you give this to them and you repeat the bone density after 2 years of taking this medication, you'll see that they might not really show any increase in their bone density. And it doesn't really mean that the medications are not working. It might mean that they're just not taking it correctly, or they're missing doses. So then we give them the option to shift to an IV form, which is called Reclast. So this IV form, they get it once a year through infusion. So it's a 15-minute infusion, 15 to 20-minute infusion, and you take it once a year. Then we monitor their response by checking a bone density in 2 to 3 years. If we're showing response, then we continue for about 5 years. But if they're still failing despite trying on the bisphosphonate, the oral or the IV, then we move on to the second line. Or they've had problems with the bisphosphonates. For instance, they really cannot tolerate the side effect. They cannot tolerate the GI side effects. For some reason or the other, they cannot do the IV infusion. It would be difficult for them to do it. Then we have second line agents that we can use. They are also injectables, but they're not given in an infusion. They just literally, it's like your immunization. They just give you a jab of it. So there are two that are used as second line. The first one that came out is Forteo, or teriparatide. It's a parathyroid hormone. So this hormone helps produce calcium. It's very potent, but we don't have any data beyond 2 years. So right now they're suggesting that if you're going to take Forteo, only take it for 2 years, because we don't know what its effects are after 2 years. The one that you see a lot of now being advertised, because it just came out a few years ago, is Prolia. Have you heard about Prolia?
Yes.
Yeah, in the ads, right? So, Prolia acts in a different manner than the bisphosphonates and the teriparatide. It acts in your immune system. It's a monoclonal antibody. So, it's really, they have, it was used as an immune modulator, one of the drugs that they give for the immune system. But they also found out later on that this drug, the denosumab or the Prolia, also works for people with osteoporosis. So they started using it for people with osteoporosis and they show great benefit. But at present, you need to remember that it's still not a first-line drug. So you will really have to, we really have to try first with the bisphosphonates before we can even consider giving you Prolia. It requires injection every 6 months, and for the persons receiving this, you would need to have normal kidney function. And you should not receive, because it works in the immune system, you should not receive it if you have history of severe allergies or low levels of calcium in your blood, and if you have an active infection or have a weak immune system. So you need, don't get this if you're gonna get Prolia. Don't get it if you're feeling under the weather, if you have flu, or people with HIV, for instance, are not candidates to get Prolia. If you're also taking another drug that acts on your immune system, or high doses of steroids that depresses your immune system, it would be safer to check with your doctor or your rheumatologist, whoever's prescribing this medication, if you can get Prolia. Because if you do, you might end up having more severe infections. Okay. And what are the side effects? So it's similar to the bisphosphonates, because it can also cause osteonecrosis, which is the rotting of the jaw. And this is the one thing that they found with Prolia that they did not find in the other treatments earlier that I mentioned. They found incidences of atypical thigh fractures. So it's very low, though, again, like osteonecrosis of the jaw. It's more, the rate of the thigh fracture, it's very low, and usually they find this out because the patients who have received Prolia over, and they have no timing. They don't know when this occurs or how many Prolia doses have you gotten, if it's just one or two. But they found out that some patients, when they usually complain of thigh pain in the thighs, and when they do an x-ray, they find, oh, there's a fracture.
On that subject, I have heard about this thigh fracture business. Mm-hmm. So is it more specific to Prolia rather than bisphosphonate?
It can still happen with bisphosphonate, but it's they're seeing more cases with Prolia, as far as I know. This is one of the things that we really check with patients who just receive Prolia. First of all, when they get the injection, some of them have serious allergic reactions. So once they get it, we can't give it. And then we check once in a while if they're developing any thigh pain. And because sometimes the fracture is not, it just shows up like a hairline, a small fracture. And the x-ray can be severe, but it can be mild.
Also, when you're prescribing bisphosphonates, mm-hmm, to a patient, mm-hmm, do you need to see improved results, or can it be the same or even worse? I mean, is it helping the patient if you're not seeing, measurable difference?
Yeah, so that's why if we're not seeing any measurable difference, or if we're not seeing worse, when we give these medications, we're expecting, whether it's Prolia, whether it's bisphosphonate, or teriparatide, we're expecting that the bone density will increase.
How about if it doesn't?
If it doesn't, then we might consider shifting to another therapy. Again, it will be a question, is this patient really taking the drug or not? Then we try giving it as an infusion to make sure that we're aware that, they're really not responding to the drug.
I mean, could a patient just not respond?
Yes, that can happen. And that's why you have second line agents, which you try when the patients are not responding. Also, there's thought right now that if you are responding, all these medications, you give them for a period of 5 years, and you may want to stop it after 5 years and go on what they call, you'll hear this term, drug holiday. So this is a time when the patient will not take any medication at all, except for Forteo or teriparatide, which we only give for 2 years because we're not assured of the safety beyond 2 years. But during this drug holiday, we're still expecting these medications to act. So while we're not giving any of the medications, we may want to check their bone density every 2 years to make sure that it's not dropping. And it's, you know, we're still having that effect. Because these medications last in your blood for years. It has a very long half-life. You don't get rid of it as fast as, let's say, your pain medications. So they're now seeing, like before, they used to give it for more than 10 years, 20 years. But what they found out recently is you might not even need to give that for these patients for that long, because they really have sustained effect, even if you stop the medication. Okay. Do you have questions still on the Prolia? Oh. The last thing, it's very expensive. That's the other thing. It would cost about $900, but it's covered under Medicare Part B. And remember, it's twice a year of infusion. And before you get infusions, you need to check your kidney function. You need some blood work.
I'd rather eat ice cream.
Yes, you'd rather eat this. So, this is just the last slide. So remember, as you said, you just take enough calcium and vitamin D. It's really a good way to prevent fractures when you do have osteoporosis, and to prevent further bone decline. You need to exercise. So this video, I'll probably be able to show you a clip of the video after this slide. And make wise lifestyle choices. If you're drinking, if you're smoking, maybe it's time to quit. And implement the strategies to help decrease your risk of falling. Again, osteoporosis is a silent disease. It's there, it doesn't cause you any pain until you fall or you fracture. That's when the problem starts. So prevention is key if you do have osteoporosis. And if you have any questions, particularly when you're about to start medications like Prolia, you need to make sure that you are the appropriate candidate for that medication. Because you might be taking medications, or your health might not be, your immune system might not be as healthy as you think, that you might have reactions to medications like Prolia.
When you speak of the silent disease, mm-hmm. and people are starting to, you know, their back is getting hunched, mm-hmm. is that the result of something happening, or does it just happen?
Well, that happens because as you age, the density of your bone decreases, and the spaces in between the spine decreases as well. So when that happens, that's why people also get shorter as they age, because your vertebral spine, which is the spine from your back, there are spaces in between them, so they decrease over time.
and they hunt. From a visual standpoint, is that symptomatic of osteoporosis, or can you have that without osteoporosis?
I'm not aware of that, but I'm pretty sure people who have that would have some degree of osteoporosis, because that would already signify some bone loss. How severe it is, we don't know.
Because I think there are a lot of people, and I think it certainly, I would have, you know, include myself in the thought that, I mean, for instance, I do have osteoporosis, mm-hmm. and people say to me, you know, your
spine.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing. I wondered, you know, is this going to happen, or does, you know.
It doesn't mean, I think, to answer that question, it doesn't mean that because you have osteoporosis, your spine will bend over time. Doesn't mean that. Where if it's the other way around, I think there's higher likelihood that you would have osteoporosis. What you can do though, and this is why it's important to do those exercises, is you can prevent, because you can help strengthen, for instance, the muscles of your spine and your back so that you can maintain that posture and maintain the alignment of that spine.
Could I just had a DEXA scan yesterday and asked the person who did it some of those questions, and she said it isn't necessarily totally a sign of osteoporosis if you lose height. For instance, you can have scoliosis that's gradually increasing. But something that I didn't realize, which she said, is that it's genetic through the maternal line. So if your mother has had osteoporosis, you're much more likely to have. And same thing for men, it's through the male line.
Mostly for men, though, while it's true, mostly for men are not that prone to osteoporosis because of most of the osteoporosis, because of the hormones. It's more of a, let's say, a female disease. But there do men do get it because, as you said, some of it's inherent in their genes. On top of that, because of the medications that we're taking, like for instance, if you're taking steroids, whether you're male or female, that can add additional stress to your body, additional factor to your body to develop osteoporosis, because the steroids enhance bone loss more than bone formation. So, but this is long-term steroids, okay? And I'm not talking about short-term steroids that you take it for 1 week, not that kind. I'm talking about patients who are taking steroids for months because they have some disease that they need to control.
So like with my mom in her 80s on prednisone for I don't even remember how long.
So those are the patients we usually screen.
What I'm thinking though is when my mom was that age, I don't know how much screening they were doing. So your question about if you see someone who's like starting to hump like this, is that a sign of osteoporosis?
Well, I can tell you, my mother, I'm not sure if she had it or not, but she was fine until she had some fluid in her lungs that collected and it caused a stress fracture, and after that it wasn't severe, but that changed it. But before that, there wasn't any sign of it.
That's why it's hard to conclude it just because you're hunching forward you have osteoporosis or not, unless you really get tested. But what we know is, because when we're diagnosed with osteoporosis, you have to remember it's also they're comparing your score, your bone density score across population. And if you fall within a certain score, then that gives you the label that you have osteoporosis. Let's say, for instance, you see your DEXA score is less than 2.5. So lower than 2.5, negative 2.5, that qualifies you as having osteoporosis.
So you just said it's passed through the maternal line. So for if I just had for women, right?
For women.
And I just had sons, so that just does that mean my diagnosis of osteoporosis has ended, or can my son pass it on to his daughter?
From what she said, no.
Yeah, I would guess no. I'm just double asking.
But aren't we only talking about a risk factor when you talk about genetic predisposition? It's a risk factor.
It's a risk factor, but as I said, like if your sons, they're smoking, they're drinking, I don't know, hopefully they don't end up taking steroids, they still might develop osteoporosis.
And vice versa. Because your mother had it, doesn't mean you're going to get it.
No, because it's not 100% expressed. The likelihood is increased because your mom had it, but it doesn't mean that you will have it, or even it doesn't mean that you will have it to the same degree. Yours might be, depending on what other factors that you have. But some people it doesn't mean that because their mom had it, they're going to have it as bad as their mom, because they had done some things to prevent it from becoming worse. They've taken calcium, they've taken vitamin D, they didn't smoke, they did not drink. All these factors that I call are correctable, we can do. But there are some factors that it's inherent in you that you cannot correct. Your gender, your female, your ethnicity,
your age.
your genetic predisposition. You can't change those. Yes.
Why is it dependent on where you live?
What do you mean?
Mm-hmm. That map that you have.
Oh, because you're talking about
was in the picket.
This map. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good question. Well,
so the yellow is less incident, right?
Less prevalent.
Less prevalent. Yeah. But look at the northern states that are less prevalent.
Move to Sunshine States.
Move to Maine. Look at Florida.
These are more probably their screening based on the genetic. You know, you have other not modifiable factors of people living in these regions.
That's from the general population.
So
you think of all the older people in Florida, that would naturally skew it.
Yeah, bunch of old people there.
They're living there, but think of them that they're also, a lot of this is transmigration too. If they're flying from Florida,
New Hampshire's fairly high. Isn't
New Hampshire
red?
And Vermont is pretty low, but you can see that, you know, what,
but
what the
New
point
Hampshire
of this
red?
Slide
yeah.
is, they're showing the point of this slide, what they're showing is, across states, wherever you are, if you're not going to do anything, your prevalence of the osteoporosis will likely increase as much as 60% by 20 years. So right now, if we only have 9 million adults in the U.S. with osteoporosis, in 2030, we're going to have 43 million. That's what they're estimating. And yeah, 43 million, not with osteoporosis, but that includes people with low bone mass, what they call osteopenia. So when you're reading the report, some of you will have normal, which is, wow, great. Some of you will have osteopenia, which means you're really not hitting the score that brings you to osteoporosis, but your bone density is decreasing already. It's low already compared to the general population.
What did you say is the level that where you're diagnosed with osteoporosis?
Negative 2.5 or minus 2.5.
Thank you.
So if you have a score between minus 1 to minus 2.5, then that's what they call osteopenia. So anything above that will be normal. So you can say hooray. So people now, there's this gray zone of osteopenia. When you have osteopenia, do you take those medications? I personally don't prescribe the medications unless you were on that osteoporotic range. So if you fall between negative 1 and let's say negative 2.4, it's a gray area. So we can discuss. I usually just advocate you making sure you're taking adequate amounts of calcium and vitamin D and exercising. Then we recheck, and if you're progressing, then that's when we treat. Now you'll see, then you're on treatment, then you'll have to repeat it and see. You'll see scores are increasing. Notice it. If the treatment is working, you'll definitely see scores are increasing. You won't feel any benefit that you'll feel your bones are getting stronger. But definitely, you'll get objective findings in your bone density. Again, it's a silent disease.
What's your experience with the press that, like on Fosamax, initially your bones will show improvement like for the first couple of years, but then by about 5 years, then your bones start actually weaken and start, there's more ash and stuff.
Yeah, well, that's why they, that's what they're saying. You give the medication for 5 years, and then after that you go for a drug holiday, because after that, they're saying that after that 5 years, this medication will last in your bone for years, and you might be able to sustain that effect. But what these drug companies are saying, and this drug is saying, but after 5 years, if you're not going to take that, then you lose that effect little by little. You don't know how by how much. It depends upon, again, a lot of factors in your body. Mm-hmm. So what is important is, if you do stop the medication and you're very concerned about your osteoporosis, just make sure that we're monitoring it and make sure that we're having that sustained effect. Doesn't mean that your bone will turn into ash all of a sudden when you stop it, because you still have that drug in you.
Yeah, that's just some press that I've been exposed to, is that initially it does a lot of good, and then after a while, I mean, even by the 5th year mark. So it sounds to me like maybe it's even better to stop it even sooner. I don't know.
That's what they're saying. Like for teriparatide, definitely they don't give it beyond 2 years, because they don't see any benefit in that. There's more harm. But we're not sure if there's more harm, basically. Now what they're saying, I think with bisphosphonates, I think what you're alluding to is the fact that they're saying that taking it longer, which is what they're finding right now, increases actually your likelihood of developing more other forms of fracture, not vertebral fracture, not osteoporotic fracture, but atypical fractures.
Okay.
I don't know if everyone here is here because they have osteoporosis, because I can tell you my experience, but exactly what you're asking. Do you all take it, or do you all have osteoporosis?
Because I couldn't tolerate the medicine.
I'll
tell you what happened to me. I took Fosamax probably at least 5 years, and I just reached a point where I thought, I'm not, well, for one thing, I had the formula, I had the name brand Fosamax, and then my insurance said go on the generic, and I took some generic, and I don't know, it was my imagination, I never had any problem, but it didn't seem quite right. I didn't feel bad or anything, but there was something different. So I voluntarily, I didn't tell my doctor, I just went off it. And I went off it for about 2 years.
And then you checked your
after body. 5 years? After
I must have been on it for at least 5 years. And then I was off it for at least 2 years, and I really didn't say, I didn't tell anybody, I just went off it. And I went in for my checkup, and they said, you know, like, when did you last take? And I said, you know, about 2 years. So they said, take a bone density test again. So I did take it, and actually it was a teeny bit. I mean, I still have osteoporosis. And you know, I was a little bit puzzled about it. So they said, the person that gave me the results said, that shows the Fosamax has been working.
Yes.
I'm thinking, I haven't been on it for 2 years. Why is it helping?
So that's
I continued not to be on it for another year or two, and then I had another bone density about a year later, and it was really it got really bad again. So now, so the doctor said to me, I think you better go back on something. And I said, what do you suggest? And, you know, what are the risks and all this? And the suggestion was perhaps that I go back on Fosamax. And I said, I don't think I want to go on Fosamax again. I've been on that for 10 years off and on. So I just started Boniva about 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. So I take it once a month. I have no idea what it's doing. I don't feel any side effects. But, you know, I don't feel I'm making progress, but I want stable. Mm-hmm. But that's the answer to that. I just didn't feel right taking it that long.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's just a personal thing, obviously.
Well,
and that's exactly,
that's what really counts. That's the research right there.
And that's exactly what we were discussing. See, she stopped it at 5 for one reason or the other. She monitored the bone density, and you see the effect was still there of the Fosamax at 2 years. starts to dwindle. But by 5 years, it had lost its effect. So now you have a discussion again whether you want to go back on it or not. But she did have an effect. So which is why, you know, it was still a good idea for her to take the same class of medication. She had response to it. So thank you. That was a good example.
I mean, it's hard.
But as she said, you won't feel any different.
Unless you have one of the
one half of the side effect, or you won't feel any different unless you fall and fracture. And you see that, oh, you fractured. And you'll see that, you know, you have really bad bone density. Definitely, though, if you've had vertebral fractures or spine fractures, compression fractures, then it you'll see that most of your doctors or providers will put you on medications for osteoporosis. So there's another, which we did not cover today, but there's another, a tool that you can use if you're interested in estimating your risk for developing a fracture. You could go to the WHO website. There's the FRAX tool. It's spelled as F-R-A-X. So it's another risk calculator, and you could do it with your your provider or your doctor.
F-R-A-X.
F-R-A-X. It's a FRAX tool. So that would require you to plug in some of the information, like your weight, your height, your bone density score, your risk factors, like smoking, alcohol, medication. So you might want to try it on your own, but I will just caution you on the interpretation. If you're not sure that you did it correctly, you might as well do it together with your provider. But that's one of the tools that we use to calculate your risk of developing fractures.
Oh, yeah, I had that done too at my doctor's.
Yeah, the FRAX tool.
It's very sobering.
Yeah. It will basically help you decide whether you want to go on the treatment or not. Because it will give you a score, let's say, in 10 years, based on what data we have, you have 15% risk of developing a hip fracture. And if you think that, oh, you don't ever want that to happen to you because it's such a debilitating disease, then you might want to consider taking medications for osteoporosis. You might be more proactive about doing something about your osteoporosis. So you could go through that. I just want to show you a short clip of what's here. If you open that DVD, you'll see like this TheraBand. So this is actually good to strengthen your upper extremities and your muscles and your proximal muscle muscles in your thighs. So that helps you become more stable. And let's see. A lot of these exercises are simple to do. My favorite one is actually the sit and stand exercise because anybody can do it.
The first exercise is called a sit to stand exercise, and it's to strengthen your quadriceps or thigh muscles. And you want to start by sitting in a sturdy chair or another surface that won't slide out from underneath you, in which that when you cross your arms, you can come up to a standing position. Okay, so now we're going to start the exercise. I'm going to have you scoot to the edge of the chair. And then we're going to do 10 repetitions coming to stand while continuing to keep your arms crossed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
So if you can't do it because you're not so steady, just use the armchair first, and then progress slowly.
8. 9.
This is harder to do than you think.
The next exercise is called hip abduction exercise, and it's to strengthen the outer hip muscle. And what you want to do is to hold on to a sturdy chair or counter for balance. And the important things to remember with this exercise is to keep your toes pointing straight ahead as you lift your leg out to the side. Okay, we'll begin. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. And then we'll switch to the other leg. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. The next exercise is called hip extension, and this is to strengthen the muscles on the back of your hip. And here we're using a TheraBand for resistance. You need to tie the band to something sturdy that's not going to move. In this video, there are wheels on the table, but they're locked down. So at home, you want to have a sturdy table or a couch, something that will stay in place when you pull against it. So you're going to hold on to the counter for support. Loop the TheraBand around your ankle and tie it to the leg. It's too difficult to pull against the TheraBand. You can do this without any resistance as well. Okay, so we'll begin this exercise. You're going to pull straight back while standing up straight. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten.
I killed my knee doing that.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I did want to throw out, if you have any issues with your hip or knee, what, check with your doctor or chiropractor or somebody, because mine told me not to do some of these at a certain time.
That's why I think of all these exercises, the first one, which is the sit and stand, is the most basic one, and anybody can do it.
Seven.
And if you really can't do it with the arms crossed, just even supporting yourself first, then you'll see as you go through it, you will progress.
Next, we'll do toe raises, and this is an exercise to strengthen the muscles on the front of your lower leg. So you're going to hang onto a chair for balance, and then you're going to raise your toes up in the air, standing nice and straight. So we'll begin. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten.
So just remember, like 10 repetitions of each of the exercises. And as she said, it's important to hear first with your therapist or doctor which one you can do. But definitely the first one, which is the sit to stand, is simple to do. Make sure your chair is steady and does not roll off. You could do it, and it does make a difference. Now, there's also a handout that we printed for people who are interested in joining Bone Builders. Bone Builders is actually a good program that some of the communities around Vermont and New Hampshire have for individuals who are interested in developing, you know, balance, strength. They hold classes, and it's in a group. A couple of my patients are doing it, and they're very pleased with the results. It's also a form of socialization for them, so you might want to try it. And, you know, it's free, so you should you should be able to contact them and get more information.
Yeah, the senior centers do those.
Yeah, a lot of senior centers around New Hampshire and Vermont conduct this. They have like a trainer or coach. Mm-hmm. You can read their testimonies too there.
They should do it here.
Yeah, maybe next year we'll have them come and do a class here.
Huh.
It's like, well,
yeah, I'm surprised they don't actually with all that they offer.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, that we'll ask them.
That's a good idea.
That's a good idea. Yes, ma'am?
I do that kicking exercise out to the sides.
Oh, yes.
And it's easy for me to do that with my right leg.
Uh-huh.
I'm finding it increasingly difficult to do the left leg. What would be happening to cause that difference?
The arthritis, basically. You remember when they're doing the exercises with that hip, it's actually for your hip joint. It's actually trying to strengthen the muscles around your hip joint. So if you have some arthritis in that hip, then that limits your leg to extend.
Uh-huh. I was wondering if it might indicate arthritis, and so that's true.
Yes, and again, you need to check with the providers what exercises you can and cannot do, because if you do them and you end up falling, that's not going to be worth it. That's defeating the purpose. Or if you end up having more pain, that's not good.
Sometimes the no pain, no gain does not apply.
Yeah, well, yes, exactly.
Also, 10 might be too many to start.
No, you can start with 2 or 3. Again, like if I can just show you briefly. Like, in here. So you see how they do it, that they do it like this. If you can't do it, it's not as easy as you think it is, especially if you've just been discharged from the hospital. Your muscles are weak, you feel weak. So what I tell them, you can just use this to push up for a few couple until you're strong enough. Then progressively just putting it in your thigh. And then later on, you could challenge yourself and do this, like what they're doing. Okay, but you can progress slowly. You don't have to do 10 at once. But any form of movement. Okay. Do you have other questions?
I have one about food. When you're mentioning smoking and drinking, what about things? Over the years. Coffee or Coke?
Mm-hmm. Caffeine.
How about carbonated? Does that do anything?
It's not the carbonated, it's the caffeine and the carbonated drinks. So it's not just Coke, but a lot of carbonated drinks will have caffeine in it. Mountain Dew. I think it's only ginger ale, I think it's no caffeine or Sprite, but not so much of a soda drinker. So it's the caffeine, not carbonated.
People drink coffee kind of indiscriminately, and they don't think about it, but, you know, frankly, I drink Coke, and
Coke as having caffeine.
Well, no, they think of it as worse. I mean, everyone thinks Coke is absolutely the worst, but coffee isn't something that seems to come into play as much on the question of osteoporosis.
Because it's sugar in Coke.
Sugar is the acid.
Or the acid, what are they called?
I'm sure
you don't want to hear that. Yeah. All the list, that's right, all the list of things that Coca-Cola will clean.
But that's true.
Yeah,
caffeine
right.
is the one acid that was not there. Too much caffeine has been associated. One of the risk factors for developing osteoporosis. Too much, let's say. When I say too much, not saying one or two cups. we will take note of your suggestions about the bone builders. Would you come if there were classes here? Okay.
Personally, I like to do exercises at home. I'm not a, not a joiner on exercises, I guess.
And you're disciplined enough that you could continue.
Yeah, because I've been doing it over a number of years, so.
You know the routine.
It's a habit, I guess.
It's hard, yeah. It's hard to try out and make an effort, because I signed up for something over at, in Lebanon, and I just sort of dropped out, because it was just that effort to go there every week, at just or twice a week, whatever. I can see, I can relate to that.
On the other side, some people who go to exercise become such a socialist that
true
keeps
too.
Them coming back. I know people in a bone builders class,
mm-hmm.
not in this area, but who wouldn't miss it for the social aspect. And so they benefit twice.
And they benefit twice from it. And what's good is that they have some training coaches there. So you're also not doing it alone. By the way, when you're doing these exercises and you feel you're not so steady, it would be good to have somebody close by when you're doing it at first, so that in case any accident happens, you're not alone. And don't force it if you really can't do it. Do it one or two and then progress slowly.
I found it was a suggestion was made to me about that is to do it in a corner, in the kitchen in the corner, and
you're
make sure you're
space.
Surrounded so that you have something
to hold
to
on
to catch if you're start to fall.
Yes, that's a good suggestion. And make sure there are no scatter rugs around the floor while you're doing these exercises, because you can slip.
I heard once, I can't remember where, but if you're using some kind of exercise with the weight bearing, that after a point, it reaches no return or something, that if you increase your weights, you get to a point where you should stop increasing the weights. Mm-hmm. Is that?
I'm not.
Say I lift a 5-pound bar or something. And I decided that after a while I should increase it to 10. Is there a point where it just doesn't do any good anymore?
It hurts.
Then stop doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
But you know, you probably wouldn't want to do too heavy weights too anyway, because if you do have osteoporosis and you're lifting too much heavy weight and you can't really carry it, you fall, you break your bone.
A physical therapist did suggest to me one time that when that particular weight got to an easy point, then increase the amount of repetitions rather than increasing
the
weight.
Yeah.
Yes.
The only thing that can happen is when you increase
the weight,
your body compensates to and you can do something to your posture that isn't as good for you, that kind of thing. So if you have someone watch you to see if you're maintaining your stability, it's a good idea if you want to raise them. I'm a physical therapist.
Oh.
Oh.
So you might even want to just do her suggestion, just increase the repetition.
The rule of thumb usually is don't increase either length of time or intensity by more than 10% a week.
10% a week.
That's for walking and that, so I think it might apply as well too.
I also heard at one point that there was a difference between calcium citrate and calcium carbonate. That one is better than the other.
It has to do with the absorption. So depends if citrate versus carbonate. If you're taking calcium with food or without food. But at the end of the day, the effect is very minimal. And as I told you, here, our diet is very high in calcium, especially if you like yogurt and milk, you're probably getting more than 1,200 milligrams a day if you're taking calcium supplements on top of your diet. So maybe when you go home, try calculating how much you're taking.
I found that in the drugstore, when you go to buy the carbonate or the citrate, that one is more prevalent than the other. Has anyone on that?
Are you talking about how available it is?
Yeah.
It is, but I don't think that, I'm not sure why. The one that's supposed to be more absorbable is less available, isn't that right?
Right, right.
I don't know.
Because people are buying it.
They're buying the one that is supposed to be absorbed less, but maybe it's just that that's what they're manufacturing. When I look at it, I'm not good about taking it. I should be taking it more, but I noticed that too.
Mm-hmm.
It's very puzzling for, I mean, it's hard for us lay people to know what to do.
Yeah. But just like, this is off the subject a little bit, but like my dentist has said that the unwaxed was better than the waxed, but you floss, but you go to buy the floss and you can't find unwaxed. So it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's difficult. Okay then. You could watch more videos if you want.
The one question that again is, if you don't see result from taking Fosamax or whatever it is, I mean, is it necessary to look for another something else, or
it might be beneficial depending on how, especially if you're one who has a, you know, your fracture risk is high. The worst thing that can happen to an individual, cost aside, is for you to have a hip fracture and lay in bed and end up, you know, debilitated. So it might be worth looking for alternatives. Of course, granted that you're not having that much of a side effect. It's always about trade-offs.
Well, it sounds like you found something effective for you, at least right now.
I don't know.
What I'm saying is you're not getting sick and all of those awful things they tell you might happen to you.
Yeah, not those side effects.
You watch those commercials.
I don't mind taking anything, so.
Yeah. And when are they going to retest?
They do it every year. Usually every 2 to 3 years. Your Medicare will cover your bone density every 2 to 3 years, not sooner than that.
What about in her case, though, where she's got new medication?
Yeah, even with treatment, it's every 2 to 3 years.
I assumed everybody here was in, you know, had the same situation, and it doesn't seem like
You might check once a year, but you probably will end up paying.
I think people are afraid of getting it or want to, you know, just learn more. Yeah. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
I refused to be tested. Oh, my doctor refused to test me for a while because I said I wouldn't take the medication.
Oh, I had the same thing.
That's another whole discussion.
I had the same thing happen.
So eventually I gave in.
And that's another reason, too. You know, if you're not going to want treatment, then might want to reconsider. Why would you get the? It's just going to add some stress on your body.
Well, you might want some kind of alternative treatment.
So what they usually do is say, you know, have the test, we can have the discussion. Or you could have not to be tested because you're not going to be treated.
Or maybe you just don't want to be treated with drugs. Maybe you want to do.
So then
an alternative treatment, so
then
so having the information.
So my experience was a horrific intolerance of Fosamax.
Oh.
And
yeah.
So
yeah.
It was just
gastro stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so what happens now is I have a scan every 3 years, mm-hmm. and as long as its state doesn't get worse, I just do, you know, the a lot of exercise, but if it gets worse, I have agreed to do the infusion treatment. Or talk about it.
Yes.
Talk about it.
I could never take that again. I was so sick. And I kept thinking it was me because I had this thing about not taking medicine, you know, but so I stayed on it too long. And wow, took a long time to recover from the effects of it.
Yeah, that's a good story too.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing your stories.
Yeah. It seems to me a reasonable procedure, you know. Whatever you do, don't give up walking, I'm told.
Or exercising. Yeah.
How much walking do you do?
A lot. An hour a day.
Every day
of
the week?
Time, yeah.
Wow. Good for you.
Did you take any medicine? I don't take any. I wasn't taking anything. Zero. But, you know, after the last scan, then I thought, okay, I'm going to go for it. Because I have a very bad vitamin D reading also. Uh-huh. And I took the 50,000, whatever. But it's hard, you know, if you're not taking medication on a regular basis, it's very hard to get into that routine, to me. But so, you know, the once a month
is working.
Well, yeah.
Better than daily.
Yeah, I'm not going to miss it. You know that. But, I mean, sometimes you have to take it. And I'm at a point where I think sometimes we do, perhaps. I don't know. But if you have bad side effects, that would be turn off.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
You need time for a question?